Welcome to False Bottom Girls, a podcast about the wonderful yet sometimes confusing world of beer and brewing.
Hi, I'm Rachel Hudson, owner of Pilot Brewing and an advanced cicerone.
Hi, I'm Jen Blair, sensory expert, homebrewer, and advanced cicerone. All right, well, welcome everyone to this episode of False Bottom Girls. I'm Jen.
I'm Rachel.
And Rachel. Today we are doing a follow-up episode about what it's like owning a brewery. So just a few episodes ago, Rachel was telling us about her experience as a brewery owner, and we did get a lot of really positive feedback from people. I know one listener was like, I just had a friend ask me when we were opening a brewery, so I'm going to have him listen to this episode.
Very real.
Yes.
Very real stuff.
Yeah, so we were talking about, you know, some other topics that are, you know, along those lines, still relevant to our listeners. And Rachel has suggested, you know, why don't I talk about the different ways I've pivoted as a brewery owner? So that's what we're doing today. Rachel?
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Take it away. Yeah, of course. Welcome.
Well, glad to be here.
Yeah, so cursing's okay.
Good. Well, I really wanted to do this episode particularly because we just released this episode about opening a brewery, what, like a month ago? Very recently. And at that time, my whole stance, and still is, you know, this is not very profitable, at least venture, that at least model that we have created for ourselves. And, you know, things that is, I just gave a very real life experience of how we are going to survive until we are able to close down in a way that makes sense when our lease is up. Well, I wanted to do this episode because some things have just changed so drastically between then and now that I just wanted to share that I don't know the answer to everything, and I'm just rolling with the beat of the drum right now. And so we could very well in a couple months have another episode discrediting everything not to say in this episode.
The pivots to the pivots.
But, and I can't remember exactly if on the last episode, I think I mentioned that we had recently lost our salesperson, and I might not have, but we had right around that time that we put that episode out, and we were, you know, this was a person that was doing part-time sales 2 to 3 days a week, or then 2 to 3 days a week behind bar, because, you know, we are small, a small little brewery, and that's what we could afford. So when this person left, we were faced with the decision, you know, do we replace them in a similar capacity? Do we hire a full-time person? We had recently been kind of toying with the idea of talking to a local distributor here in Charlotte. So we decided to do that and just have a meeting. And after talking to them and kind of playing with the numbers, it really just made more sense to take this leap and go with our distributor than versus hiring a full-time person who has benefits, you know, the whole nine yards. It costs a lot of money. And they're just one person. One person can only sell so much beer.
Before you go on, when you're talking about hiring a distributor versus hiring a full-time salesperson in North Carolina, breweries who make under 25,000 barrels a year, is that correct?
I believe it has been raised to 50, if not over 50, since change.
Yeah, but there's a limit. Barrelage limit. Yeah. If you're making under that, you have the option to either self-distribute or sign with a distributor, but it's either or. You can't sign with a distributor and then also self-distribute. Is that correct?
Well, actually you can. Like, you can sign. Oh, okay. So, for example, Triple C, for example, Tryon, who is a distributor, we ended up signing with, they distribute their cans here in Charlotte, but Triple C self-distributes their kegs.
Oh, okay.
So you can really kind of create any agreement you want, as long as both parties are okay with it.
Yeah, I thought it was an either or, but maybe what I'm thinking of is when they were trying to lobby to have that barrelage lifted, it was because if you hit, say, 25,000 barrels, then you had to sign with a distributor and you could no longer self-distribute at all.
I believe that is correct.
And so you, like, disincentivizing breweries from growing, because if you didn't want to sign with a distributor, then you would have to cap your production.
Yes. And In all honesty, that law, I mean, the fact that they pushed for it, like, it's really great that they did and they got it and they got what they want. But in all honesty, once you get to a certain size, you really can't self-distribute that well. And you the need for a distributor really is there. So I really do think it was a, I don't know. I don't know how much money and time they wasted on it, but it probably was a lot. And I don't think it was a waste in their eye, but I just don't think, for example, we are making at currently like a little over 300 barrels of beer a year at Pilot Brewing. When I left Noda, who is very large right now, it was about, they were making about like 15, 16, something like that, thousand. It's a large amount of beer.
That's yeah, and Noda is one of the bigger breweries in
Yes.
Charlotte. So that was yeah. So 15,000 was kind of
And I can
one of the
see
biggest.
why 25,000 gets nervous because you do want to grow and you don't want to give up that profit margin. And this is a great segue actually into one of the main reasons why we signed with Tryon is because you get down here to North Carolina, and I came from Virginia, where you have to sign with the distributor. You do not have an option if you want to sell that beer outside the brewery.
Yeah,
So the
Georgia is the same way.
relationships, okay, and the
Same in
relationships are
Georgia.
different, you know, between the distributor and brewery. They're a little bit more closer. Everyone works together a little bit more. Arguably, some of the best beer weeks come out of cities where relationships are like that. That's another podcast episode. You know, you're growing so much and you're used to this self-distribution model. You've created jobs through it. You have drivers, you have salespeople. You really do. You're like, okay, this is working. Why would I change? I don't want to, you know, change is scary too. But I do think there was a benefit to letting go of this mentality of I've got to retain all of this profit margin and do it myself and hand it over to somebody.
Yeah,
Because the
which
profit
seems
margin is still
scary.
there. It's very scary. Oh my God, there's so many reasons why that's scary. There are a handful of distributors here that I do not want to work with. Typically, you have in most cities, the way it works is you have someone who will distribute the Bud Anheuser-Busch products, the AB products, and you'll have another distributor who might do like Miller Coors products.
Right. Yeah, you usually have like AB houses, Miller houses when it comes to distributors.
And they'll pick up other brands too, like here and there. But then you'll have other distributors that do maybe some are wine focused that carry a couple breweries. Tryon, for example, I would call them a specialty beer focus. They
Yeah.
opened with the intention of never carrying the big guys. They have gotten rid of brands that they have carried once they have sold out to one of the big guys
Right.
before. So,
And another thing I will say about Tryon that I really appreciate about them as a distributor is they, particularly starting in 2021 with the Me Too movement in the industry, is they did have some breweries part of their portfolio who were called out for, very credible like sexism, racism, all of that, and they
oh,
dropped
they
those
stopped.
breweries.
Yeah.
And in one case, I won't say what brewery it was, but in one case, they were like in the midst of like having a truck of the beer coming down, and they called them and were like, "Turn around, you're not our customer anymore
Yeah, that's
because this is
amazing.
because
I
your
totally forgot
ownership is
about that.
doing this." Yeah, and that is amazing, and that to me is like, and I think particularly in the craft, on the craft side, there is a lot of mistrust about distributors for the same reason, you just mentioned, is like some of them are Buds, some of them are Miller Coors. And, if your distributor, particularly if you're in a state that you have to have a distributor, if you have to have a distributor, they don't really have an incentive to prioritize selling your brands. And I'm not at all saying that that means that they don't prioritize. I do have experience working down here for different breweries who have run into that problem with the distributors being like, we're actually prioritizing this other brewery over you. So anyway, there's a whole bunch of things about it, but I know when, particularly when craft was growing like 10, 15 years ago, there was a lot of distrust about signing with a distributor. And that makes like knowing things like that about Tryon, and it is a family-run distributor, which
Oh,
I mean
yeah.
a lot of them are, but knowing that they kind of stand on those principles, and I shouldn't say kind of, knowing that they stand on those principles makes me think, okay, like they are paying attention. They're not in it, only to make profit. And because especially like in states where you have to have a distributor, why not? Why not open a distributorship? I'm sure there's reasons why, but knowing that Tryon is just going to say, you're not our kind of customer is pretty great.
It would have devastated us if Tryon said no. Like, we, first of all, we are like, we know the owners, that two of the people that run most of the company are a husband and wife team. They are the same age as me and my husband. They have very similar values, morals. They're just good people. And like, all the people that work under them, they treat everyone with like respect and just they're like us.
Right.
She's even very outvocal to the point where I am, and very outgoing. Like, and I'll tell you a funny story here in a minute about that. But like, I think it's because her and I, being the way alpha figures that we are, that this is all happening.
Right.
I
And I
really
should also say
do.
that
Real quickly, too.
Tryon Distributing is not sponsoring
They are not. I
this
am. I was going to be so sad.
episode.
I've heard there's smaller guys around here who might have put a lot of focus on me, but, and I don't know. I didn't go talk to anybody else. I want to try on. I know what's good, and I didn't even want to think about if they were going to say no. Luckily, we are a 6-year-old born. I was actually six, and I was like, oh my God, we've been open for so long. Where has time gone? But we are a 6-year-old brewery. We have established our brand. We have won a lot of medals. We have done the work to, I think, prove to a distributor that we can handle this. Because our challenges doing this is, we don't have a lot of beer. I don't, if you've ever been a pilot, you've seen us. We're making like 300 barrels a year. Some of that has to stay in-house. We're talking about giving these guys like 28 barrels a month of beer. A barrel is the equivalent of like two big kegs that everyone's used to seeing in the bars. Two of those is one barrel. This is not a lot of beer, right? And it's expensive too. Our kegs, our six stools are $130. Most people are used to paying like maybe $195 per six stool. You know, it's a for the more beer bar situation restaurant who is okay with those prices. You're not going to sell this beer everywhere. They knew to all this, you know, we knew this was a challenge. They're crazy. In my opinion, they are crazy to take us on logistically. Like I said, I mean, it was very serious. It's like it's a nightmare to pick up from us. We were talking about driving the beer to them. You know, like, there's not that much beer. It's expensive. Like, it's not a good situation. So,
Yeah, so have you already signed a contract with Tryon just so in case they
oh
hear
yeah.
this
Oh
episode,
yeah.
they're like, oh, actually, those are all very good
They
points.
know all this. They know all this. But like, they were so excited to do it. One, because we are established. If we were just a new Joe Schmo, there's no way. Like, they would be silly. But we have proved ourselves. And apparently, I didn't know this at the time. Of course I wouldn't. But that first time we got on the phone, or had a Zoom call with Ed. So Ed is the president of Tryon, and his father started it. But Ed is the working see, you know, president person in charge. So, but apparently his father was in that room. We just didn't know it when we were having this conversation. And at the end of it, and I hear all this afterwards, his dad was so excited. He's like, this is why we started. This is what we need to
Oh.
do. He's like, I don't care what it takes. We have to take these guys on. Like, this is
Oh my
craft.
God, I
This is
love
getting
hearing
back
that.
to it. He was so excited. So we were in from the get-go. We needed
That's
to be.
so
It was,
cool.
we needed this. We needed this so bad. And so then, you know, we're talking about this, and of course Melissa and I are chatting, and she's like, you know, the first time she said it, she's like, really want you to think about contract brewing. And I was like, yeah, back of my mind. Like, that is so far off my radar right now. I just need to like get you all this beer, get it out there, figure that out, make like keep making more beer. And then like 20 minutes later, she brought it up again in a text, and I was like, like, it got me for some reason. And I was like, okay. Okay. So I text Town. I was like, can we set up meetings as soon as possible?
Right.
And Town's like, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, really quickly, explain what
Sure.
because I
Yes.
don't know that we've actually like defined this on here, and as us trying to get back to making sure
Yes.
that we're not talking over
No,
people's
you're
heads,
correct.
what is contract brewing?
So essentially, you can ask a brewery to brew beer for you. That's your recipe. They do all the work. They make the product, and you just pay them to do it. But it's your recipe. Basically, it says like on the can label, it would say, you know, brewed for Pilot Brewing by Town Brewing or at Town Brewing, something like that.
Okay.
So you do have to have like a designation on the label, but it's not a secret. We contracted out them three of our brands. a Pilsner, our ESB, which is our pub ale, and our Island Hopper, which is an IPA.
Your World Beer Cup award-winning pub
yes,
ale.
My five-time award-winning, one-time World Beer Cup award-winning.
I will always say that when you talk about your pub ale.
It's very delicious. But we've built these brands up, so we're really happy that we don't really have like too many core brands, but in essential, but these kind of have like evolved to stay around. And so are some other ones, but we have picked that these three to focus on. We didn't really want to go too heavy because we don't want things to like compete with each other.
Right. Well, but, and another, so I will say that's kind of a pivot too, and maybe you were going to talk about this, but that's kind of a pivot too on your part, because when Pilot first opened, it was kind of like, we're not going to brew the same beer twice.
Oh yeah. Never say never. I mean, the whole time that we've been open, and we've pivoted all the time from that, because, you know, we obviously kept bringing beers back. They were good. They won awards. Why
wouldn't you? Exactly. Yeah.
So I also said we would never have wine. We'd never have liquor. We'd never this, that, and that. And now we have all those things. I'd never have a TV. Like, trust me, everybody will talk you into them because they're good ideas, because you need to make money. You know, right. It's so easy to put together. Like at the time, you couldn't have liquor bar, but we could have wine and we could have mimosa. So, you know, start little by little. It's kind of, because we don't have food either. So you don't think about pleasing everybody who comes right. along. You're just like, I'm a brewery. You're going to drink my beer. But if you want more people to come spend money in your tap room, and that's your main model, business model is your tap room, you need to provide products for them. So we carry everything that we can at this moment.
Yeah. So, and yeah, and beer culture has shifted, or brewery culture has shifted now to where more people are treating it like that third place for whatever. And so you have people, like, now customers expect to be able to come into a brewery and get cider or wine or cocktail.
Or food truck.
Or, yeah. So yeah. there's, yeah, so you have to, expectation. You have to do what your customers want. If you want to continue
true.
To have customers.
Yes. We've brewed seltzers now, you know, we've done different things. I mean, it's all like, that's all good too. But then like the most other side of it is events. You got to host every single which way event you can possibly do that makes sense. So it's
right.
like, that's all a pivot that you figure out along the way. But we really did, you know, taking on this contract step, thinking it through and start talking to these two breweries that are local to us. One is a little bit bigger than the other. So one, the smaller one, just naturally made more sense for us to start. So like we did, we like a couple weeks ago, we're on the phone with them having this conversation about pricing. It's a natural fit for them. They were about to take on, or try to maybe take on, two to three other breweries that were interested, but we wanted all that space. So they're like, it's, you know, it was great. It's great timing for everyone. It was great timing for them, for us. Tryon as a distributor. And if you don't live in Charlotte, you don't know this, but Charlotte loves Charlotte beer. Oh my God. Like the beer buyers, all the bars, so many Charlotte taps. Like some, it is very unique to other places I've lived in.
Yeah, like, it really is. But you're absolutely right.
It's crazy. And when I moved here, it was kind of weird. But now, you know, of course, being a brewery here, I love it. So Tryon doesn't actually really have any local brands in Charlotte. They do Triple C, but they only have the rights to their package for like grocery stores and stuff. So it's not really anything they can stand on to get in bars. So, and then the closest brewery they had recently closed, and they were in Concord, I think, or so it's 26 Acres Brewery. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. They're a little bit outside of Charlotte.
Right. They're like, yeah, like Norman, Concord.
Something like that. It's not too far. It's like 20 minutes down the road. But I swear to God, like,
far enough.
Charlotte Barton, but beer buyers love Charlotte beer. Even to them, that's like, yeah, a little far. So we're the first brand that they've had since Unknown. Unknown's a brewery.
Yeah.
Is it? Since unknown period of time. No. A brewery used to be here called Unknown, and they were rather large, but that was the last time they had a true in the city Charlotte brewery. So all their sales reps, like 10 of them. So hello, now we have 10 sales reps versus one.
Right.
They are so excited because this is a foot they can stand step. They can foot. I don't know if I was going to say that right. So I just stopped this. What they can stand on. I think I said it right. to get some beer and And like, so it's great to have for them to have that sense of excitement. Obviously, that's great for me. Great timing for them. 26 acres, the one big one that they did have, now has all these available placements in grocery stores and draft lines available. And they want it to be able to capitalize on that and not miss out on those existing draft lines they already have. Because people will switch things up if they can't get it. And sometimes restaurants, they like to keep the same menu for a long time. They don't want to switch, you know? So they were like, can you do everything that we've been talking about, but like way earlier? And I was like, yeah, I think so. Like, so we're like, the past 3 weeks have just been talking with town, ordering things, making sure everything is good schedule-wise. And they brewed our first two batches. You know, today's the 23rd when we're recording this of August. They brewed on the 21st and the 22nd. They're brewing another batch next week. And then we're going to get all three of those batches out to try on. And 2 days ago, I just had another meeting with him about how, because first it was going to be a slow, make sure everybody has what they want. And now we're just like, fuck it. Just get as much beer out to as many people who want it to brew, 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 brew. We're just going to take it. Like, they want to go to the east. They want to go to the west right now. I was like, yeah, I really don't care. Like, we're going to do this. Like, this is my time. And if I don't capitalize on it right now and get in as many as I can, I could, you know, it's just like when you open a brewery, you have that honeymoon period and you really got to capitalize on it. And what I learned from my last honeymoon period opening the brewery is that I should have weekly established, monthly established events and made that like, so everybody who came in that first month knew what was going on instead of waiting and trying to build that back up.
Yes.
So I'm not trying to, this time I'm trying to be like, I can order everything you need and make beer if you can sell it. Like, I will make you as much beer as I can if you can sell it. Like,
right.
And that seems to be the general conversation. So the other day I texted Jen and I was like, listen, we just had this episode about how everything is shit. At least that's the way I felt about it. Like, or like, that's my feeling about the brewery, because we're just struggling along until we can make it. I mean, we could earn a lot of extra money that could actually save our brewery by doing this. So we have to try, because it's low risk in a way. We have an established distributor. We're an established brand. They have, you know, they're getting existing customers with us. It's not like they're just like starting from ground zero. They are entering the Bojangles Stadium because of us, which is where the local hockey team plays.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Because we do this beer for the hockey team. And last year we did 200 cases for them. The only reason we could have sold more beer to the market if we could have made it, but we had to supply the stadium. Right. So, like, we really want, it's called Puck Off Pilsner. It's our Checkers hockey, an official Checkers hockey beer, actually.
Which is amazing.
It is. It's got their logo on it. It's 100% their brand. And we sell it all hockey season long. And I really do think this could be like the hockey beer of Charlotte, since we can make more.
Right. Now.
And a cheaper price, too, for everyone. Everyone's making money. The beer buyers get a lower price. Town makes money. Tryon makes money. We make money. And right. We don't have to buy an extra building or rent or more equipment or staff or another tap room or train. That's how the breweries here try to grow or do grow, is they open more locations. And I just cannot do that.
Right.
To my soul.
Right. And, you know, one thing that I know you and I have talked about, and I don't remember if you mentioned it in the last episode we did about this, but looking in from the outside, I have seen as your business has grown, as you all have been in business, you have gone from trying to keep a lot of stuff in-house to manage, you know, costs or whatever, and just have kind of having that control over your brand new business, which is completely understandable, to, you know, hiring a marketing firm, and now you have a distributor. So it's been really cool not only to watch you all grow and get into all of these new things, but also just as your friend, seeing more and more loads come off of your back as the owner, and you being able to trust in, you know, in your marketing and your distributor, all of that, you know, and just being able to give that to other people, so you have just more. I'm not going to say more free time, But it's very good to see those things. Yeah, that you're not having to do everything now. You can trust these other people to do it for you,
and that
allows you to focus on other things. And I just really enjoy seeing that about this whole journey for you specifically. And
thank you. I do think it's like you could, if you're scared that letting other people do things is going to make you crash and burn. If you do it all, you're going to crash and burn anyways. So
that's an excellent point.
Just might as well take the risk and let. I mean, what's it all about? You can't just live life like going through the steps every day because it's not going to work out.
Right. And you can't do everything. And you're not, as a small business owner, you're not
good at everything.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Like people, there's a reason you pay people to do stuff because they are better at it and they should make you money and not cost you money.
Right.
And sometimes that doesn't work out. Sometimes you have someone that costs you money and you get rid of them.
Right.
And that's a big learning curve too. Like letting go, getting out of the I can do everything for myself phase is a big learning curve. And then letting go of people, even people that have been with you for a long time, if they could be the best team member, but if they are bringing down the morale of other team members around them, it's not worth it. And I still need to listen to myself on that one, because if this salesperson
you can
stay around,
to
yeah, true. If I had this salesperson not leave, I don't think I'd be here right now.
Right.
Like I'd still be trying to truck along doing what we were doing. And that's not okay. And it's not like I part of me was going back and forth. And I do this every time. I like don't listen to my gut, and I should. I've gotten better about it, but hindsight's 2020, right?
Right.
Put it that way.
Right.
You'll always realize. Yeah. You'll always look back and be able to see like, damn, I fucked up there. I should have let this person gone sooner. But you know, as long as you can recognize it and move on, that's all you can do, because you can't change the past.
Right. But, and exactly. You learn from that, okay, I can trust my gut.
That's a big part of it too. Because
right.
You're never going to know, no matter what happens.
Right. And we've had conversations about that before, about other things related to our jobs where, you know, it's like, I had a feeling this was how it was going to turn out with this person, and it turned out exactly the way I thought it would.
Mm-hmm.
So like now I know, and going mm-hmm. forward, that person will just not be part of this anymore. So talk a little bit about, because I know we've talked about contract brewing before, and I don't know if we've talked about it specifically with Pilot on the podcast, but what do you look for when you're looking for a contract brewing partner? Like, what are your concerns? What do you want to hear and see? And do you not want to hear and see?
Yeah. I mean, first and foremost, like there are, you know, when you think about all the breweries in Charlotte, there's not many that come to my mind that
right.
I really would trust with this. And that's not because people suck at making beer. That's not at all the case. It's just, there's so much quality control. One, you got to be big enough. So that takes out half of them anyways, right?
Right.
But there's so much quality control that comes with this.
And of course, Pilot makes very high quality beer. You have an excellent palate. Your staff is developing excellent palates, and you all don't release things that aren't good. So
yeah.
I have to imagine for me, giving up control of that, but not having sole control over that would be the hardest thing to trust.
Yeah. It would be depending on the partner.
True.
I feel like I have, I feel like my expectations for this week, I thought I was going to find myself at the brewery a lot more this week, but I haven't been, like not Pilot, but Town, as they were brewing our beer. Like we were there for the first day, but the first beer is Pilsner, right? It's one malt. there's not much going on. There's not much to fuck up. If you're going to fuck it up, it's because it's something you guys did, and it's not going to be on me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So like, there's that. It's, if it has an infection, it's something that you cleaned up. If it's not attenuated, like, so at the end of the day, I know, like, if someone, like, first of all, Town Brewing and Noda Brewing I trust these guys a lot. I used to work at NOTA. They win awards. They make very well clean beer. The brewers are very well experienced. They're good people. And, you know, it makes financial sense. There's definitely other breweries around here that I think make fine beer and probably would do well, but there's also a personal factor that comes with it. And for me, like, I just know I can trust these two breweries. I don't need to talk to them and have further conversations to know. I didn't need to have any conversations about the quality of their beer. Right. Actually, our conversation was about dollars and cents and timelines and what, you know, not, well, how do you feel that you make your beer? Do you think you can make our beer just as well as we can make our? Because if I didn't think that they could do it, I wouldn't be there. And I'm not saying those are the only two breweries within my area that I would trust. I'm not saying that. But those are the first two that came to my mind. Those are the two I want to have conversations with. And they've gone well, so I don't really need to move past that point right now. Right. But other than that, these breweries are just like, they made sense. And I just, I don't know. It's just that gut feeling. That's where it kind of came from. They also are very respectful. Like, I can go in there. Fetty is the brewer at town. He's been texting me all yesterday and the day before, just giving me updates or anything like that. The one beer I would say, so they've done Pilsner and they've done Island Hopper. I feel like I'm the most concerned about pub ale, and not because of them, but because sometimes I just really wanted to make sure that the pub ale color is the same. That's really like on my mind for a reason, because that can change when you scale up. And we are like Fetty and I, we do use the same beer building programs. So that makes me feel good. And like our recipes, like they're identical, like everything should line up. You just never know when you really scale up if something's going to be a tad darker or lighter. So I'm very worried about that. I'm not very worried about it, but it is on my mind and I am going to be there. But, you know, and it's like, what are you going to do? You're going to do the best you can. Right. The other thing I'm pretty worried about with pub ale, and I shouldn't be, because I'm a little bit worried about the yeast. So we get the pub ale yeast from White Labs that we use at our brewery at Pilot. But that is so expensive on a 30 barrel pitch. Mm-hmm. I am talking like over double the amount than what I could get from another supplier.
Whoa.
Yeah. And so my IPA yeast came from a supplier who we had a friend that used to work there. I'm not saying they're expensive. They were like $200, maybe more than the pitch I got from a supplier that I'm used to working with. And like, that was about double. The White Labs was about double of theirs. And I was just like, you guys, I cannot afford, I just cannot afford that.
Right.
It's a huge difference. So I use a pretty consistent supplier for like my lager yeast. So I've just switched everything over to them. It's a Kvik string for Island Hopper, and it doesn't really worry me, but the pub ale is just so award-winning.
Right.
So, but I shouldn't be worried, because in the end of the day, all like their strain is the same strain that I was using at White Labs. They're all pretty much coming from the same place as that strain, as that ESB strain in the example of pub ale. Yeah, but that's the reality of upscaling. You can't just spend $1,700 or whatever it was on a pitch of 30 barrel yeast when you don't have to.
Right.
Because I'm trying to make money and lower the cost.
Right.
And that's not lowering the cost. So I just couldn't justify that. And that's going to be part of it. So I'm like 10% nervous. Just a little bit in the back of my mind, but I feel like it's going to be okay. Because that's how I live my brewing life.
Right. I feel like that too. And it's just so cool to be able to see all of this happening for you and for Pilot. And I'm just really proud of you and what you've done with Pilot. And just seeing it grow is such a cool thing, because I get, you know, I have a unique point of view because we're best friends. So I also hear about the bad days and also the good days, but it's really cool just to see all of this, like, I don't want to say paying off, because I think that it's paid off for you in a million different ways.
Oh, but if it would be fantastic if it paid off financially.
Yeah, right, exactly. Literally nice. Paid off.
Yeah. Literally. That's why I'm like, fuck it. Like, if we can just, like, one day, if even if we shut the brewery down, we could still brew this beer.
Right.
And make money off of it. Or we could sell the brand one day if that's what we needed to do to pay our investors back.
Right.
Because if I am able to pay them back, I will. I promise.
Well, cool. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of that with us. And I know our listeners will be just as excited to hear all of these things about Pilot. And I do think that, you know, similar to the first episode or the episode we did about owning a brewery, being able to hear, you know, like, this is the real life, and here's, like, there's positives and negatives, and there's growing pains, and, you know, sometimes you take these kinds of chances that are, you know, are going to pay off for you really well, and sometimes you take chances that don't, but you still learn from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just a really important thing for people to hear about, like, hey, owning a brewery isn't just, like, posing with your arms crossed in front of the stainless, you know, and winning awards and stuff. Like, it's real
work. A lot of work.
And yeah, and it's cool to see the different ways that Pilot has grown.
Hopefully we can just keep on making it happen.
Right.
You know? We'll see.
Yes.
But, you know, we'll see how this goes. Come back with an update.
Yeah. We'll be back in like 6 weeks and be like, so.
Don't do it.
No.
Just kidding. Turns out they can't make any of our beer.
Right.
Just kidding. It's going to be great.
You know what? I went to the brew day and the pub ale was 0.5 SRM different. And I can tell that with my eyesight. So we canceled the whole contract.
Yeah. Dumped it. Nah, it's going to be great. It's going to be great.
Yes. Well, thank you, Rachel, for sharing all of that with us.
You are welcome.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll pause here so you can all also say you are welcome. All right. So if you have got any suggestions for topics you would like us to talk about, let us know. And, you know, like, this, our last episode came from a suggestion. This episode kind of came from, you know, from
my
the
suggestion.
Feedback. Yeah, your suggestion. But also the feedback we got from people saying, hey, this was really helpful. And I really liked hearing this. We want to make sure we're making things that you all want to listen to. So feel free.
Yes, please do.
You can reach us on social media at False Bottom Girls on Instagram and Facebook. You can email us falsebottomgirls@gmail.com. You can also visit our website. We have a form there you can submit to contact us. It's falsebottomgirls.com. This has been False Bottom Girls.
And we make the brewing world go round.